Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the NCAA tournament, welcome on Brian Cabrowski to the program. Brian, of course, writes for Hoops Hype. You can always follow him on Twitter, at Brian Cabrowski. All right, Brian, let's start here. Are you a little nervous that your Ducks are too trendy of a number 12 seed?
Oh, man. Someone has done their homework. I have little to no faith in the roster of the Oregon Ducks right now. Every year since they've made the tournament, as long as I've followed this team, which is quite a while now, if they've made the tournament, I've picked them to win it, even in years where they had no business doing such. You know, that includes years with Arslan Kazemi or Joe Young is the only real talent on the roster. This year I have them going to the Sweet 16, which I think is reasonable. Because, you know, especially given, you know, the fact that I don't think that this is that great of a Wisconsin team. And I think, you know, after that, Kansas State, you know, if they beat UC Irvine, maybe not the worst matchup for Oregon, considering Kansas State is an injured best player. But, you know, I think that this roster is very flawed. Peyton Pritchard obviously has played well recently, but I think he has trouble creating out of the pick and roll. I think that, you know, across the board, there's just a lot about Oregon that I'm not particularly enthusiastic about. You know, Lewis King is good. He's a serviceable player, but he's not someone that gets me particularly excited either. I know that, you know, he's someone who has kind of trended on draft boards in different directions. Now it's kind of stagnant. But, I mean, he's during the conference tournament, he was 2-for-7 on his isolation plays. So in terms of creating his own offense, I'm not sure if he has that, but I will say that Dana Altman always makes his team better, and while I'm, you know, down on their offense, I'm high on their defense. So I think that, you know, with a coach like Dana Altman, who knows how to get the most out of his team, and with a program like the Oregon Ducks that's now focusing on defense, the Sweet 16 is a pretty reasonable expectation.
A recent Duck that we're now starting to get a more consistent look at is Tyler Dorsey. Tyler's obviously with a lot of the injuries that we're seeing with the Grizzlies, Dorsey's getting a lot of extended minutes. Do you think he has a chance to become a legitimate rotational player in this league?
I've always felt that about Tyler Dorsey. In fact, you know, when I think when he was an incoming freshman at Oregon, you know, he was on the same roster as Dylan Brooks, Chris Boucher, Jordan Bell. Everyone actually felt that that Tyler Dorsey probably had the most upside out of anybody on the team. You know, Dorsey could be a real threat as a scorer. You know, great locker room kid, really, really high character, keeps to himself. But you know, in terms of his shooting, I mean, he's a really good spot up shooter. And I think that, you know, he's able to create a little bit out of the pick and roll, which I like. And you know, realistically, you know, anyone who has a jump shot that looks as pretty as his is gonna have success in this league. He's averaging 1.3 points per possession on jump shots. You know, since joining the Grizzlies, which ranks in the 98th percentile. And 1.3 points per possession on catch-and-shoot plays, which ranks in the 94th percentile, both among all players in the NBA. Granted, these are really small sample sizes, but he's shooting about 44% on catch-and-shoot plays with a lot of threes, and 46% on jump shots with a lot of threes as well. Not really one to create much off the dribble, but certainly can if he needs to. And really, I mean, the fact that he's shooting about 45% from long range, you know, since he got to the Grizzlies, is kind of what you need to know about him. I think every shooter who can knock it down consistently has a role in this league for potentially a long time, and I like that he's going to be paired up with Dylan Brooks, his old teammate from Oregon. That's going to be, you know, I've always liked the Grizzlies because you guys are good to me here on 99.9, but, you know, I get a chance to follow two guys who I've cared about and who have met and who I've interviewed who have liked a lot over the years, and Dorsey and Brooks all on the same team, so I'm happy about that for both of them.
You make an interesting point because you are right. Tyler Dorsey does have a very pretty jump shot. Do the Grizzlies have the widest range between prettiest jumper in the league? Because Tyler Dorsey's got to be on the right side of the bell curve. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you got Joakim Noah, with the nice. Although I will give Joe Kim credit. Based on which side of the floor he's on, he can kind of side spin it to make sure to like that it hooks towards the goal. Or sometimes if he's on the left side of the floor, he can kind of cut it to where it cuts to the cuts to the net. You gotta admit that's got to be two of the widest ranges between like the aesthetics of a jump shot in the NBA.
Yeah, but it's sort of an unfair caveat because Joakim Noah, his the fact that he's even an NBA player still is like
it's awesome.
Kind of an exception that a lot of teams don't really have a caveat of. So the wide range is like it's mostly because Memphis has given Noah a place to play basketball in a time that no one else really had expected such an opportunity for him. So obviously that's a long range, but no one else has Noah, so that's not really fair.
Obviously, it's not a long-term question, but I do find myself wondering, now that Noah has shown the league that he can still contribute, obviously he's not going to be a starting center and whatnot, I find myself kind of bittersweet when I watch him play because, like, last night he just played with just remarkable energy. Like, it's so much fun to watch someone who loves to play basketball as much as he does, but you got to kind of expect that given the fact that he has really shown the ability to be a contributor again, the Grizzlies are probably not going to be his best option for next year. Does that seem fair to you? Because to me, it just feels like the Grizzlies aren't obviously going to be able to give him more money than probably anyone else. And if you're Noah, at this point in your career, you probably want to go to a contender.
Yeah, you'd have to think so, but I'm not entirely sure which contender is giving him a contract larger than a minimum deal. I think that he'll probably end up at a minimum somewhere, just because, I mean, he's been productive out of Memphis, don't get me wrong, and I think that he's really surprised a lot of people with the fact that he could still contribute, including, probably most of New York. And, you talk about players like Noah, and you kind of think about their role in the NBA, considering, very timely now with March Madness. This was, at one point, one of the best players in the country. In terms of like how exciting he was, and how dynamic he was, and how successful he was. He's had a really strange kind of up and down NBA career. Obviously, got a very large contract, and didn't exactly play to it. But it's how someone goes from underrated to overrated to underrated again very fast. And I think that now maybe we're kind of seeing him starting to reach where he actually is. And I think that it'll be really interesting to see what his market looks like because. There's going to be a lot of guys available this summer, and I'm not sure where Noah ranks in that. He's probably closer to the bottom edge in terms of his overall value, given his age and given, where he's at in his NBA career.
Brian Kabrowski of Hoops Hype is joining us. Going to get into a couple NBA questions. Wanted to ask you a couple of draft questions, really, because now that we have the NCAA tournament, a lot of the country is going to get their first look at some of these guys. Last Friday night, we saw Zion Williams take on North Carolina almost single-handedly. I just find myself just in awe of him, and I do understand the jump shot concerns. Tim Legler was on Golic and Wingo this morning, and he basically said he thinks that Ja Morant will be the better NBA player because of his ability to shoot. Do you see his side of the argument?
No. I don't. Ja reminds me a lot of Russell Westbrook. Ja's not exactly a great shot creator either. I mean, he can score, which is great, and he can score at a really rapid level, but there are much better shooters, across the league or across the NCAA than Ja Morant. He's not somebody who I think is really going to light the world out with a three-point contest championship anytime soon. I think that he's playing a better shooter today. The point guard that he's facing today, Marcus Howard. Obviously, Marcus Howard, for those who don't know, at Marquette is undersized, but Marcus Howard is a much better shooter as a point guard than Ja Morant. So, I mean, his round one matchup can outshoot him. And I think that, that's kind of actually a pick that, while it's 12-5, a lot of people are picking Murray State there. I'm picking Marquette because I think Marcus Howard is really just a total treat to watch as a point guard. That's actually the game that I think is a lot of people for NBA drafts communities have circled on their schedule for today. I think it's at 4:10 p.m. Eastern time, so I guess it'll be around 5 o'clock for you guys. But I believe that that there are better point guards who can shoot than Morant in this upcoming draft class, including DeAndre Hunter is someone that you guys talk about a lot on here. He's not necessarily a point guard, but there are guys at the top of the draft who I think can definitely outshoot Morant, and that's an important caveat, I think. Morant is someone who I think is, you know, feared and can play in transition better than almost anybody, can play in isolation better than almost anybody. He can outscore almost anybody, too. But, you know, in terms of Zion, like, Zion can do all of that and more. Zion, you know, I've long described him as, like, an A-plus Julius Randle. You know, the way he can go up and down the floor, like an absolute wrecking ball, is just so crazy. And, you know, I don't want to go too deep into Zion's, you know, play-by-play breakdown, but the things he can do, I think he's got to be at least the best college basketball player, you know, since Anthony Davis, and maybe even more so than Anthony Davis. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Duke team can do as the tournament progresses.
Who's the last player that we've seen like him that's been a college guy that's going to enter the draft that's generated this much attention? Because, like, even with Anthony Davis, while we knew how amazing he was, and honestly, even if Zion and Anthony Davis were in the same draft class, you could make a legitimate argument that Anthony Davis, if they were the same age, that would obviously be the smart pick of a draft in the draft. But in terms of just like the buzz and the energy and kind of the interest that he creates, I mean, because even Carmelo for me didn't really garner this kind of interest. I mean, who do you think is the last guy that we've seen that kind of created this much interest from people that may not even be the biggest college hoops fans?
Interesting. I mean, obviously the biggest question or the biggest person you'd probably think of would be LeBron, but he didn't go to college.
Correct.
So I don't know. I mean, I think there was a lot of buzz around Trae Young last year, but it kind of died down from the tournament. Honestly, I think Trae really lit things up for a while. Steph Curry had a lot of buzz at Davidson, but not quite like this because it was a mid-major and we hadn't quite seen anything like it before. You know what? I mean, Kevin Durant, nowhere near this level.
Honestly, not to interrupt you, but like the best answer I could think of was honestly, like, Iverson had some buzz, but really Iverson didn't have the buzz until he crossed over Jordan in the NBA, and then that's when it was like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. We legitimately were thinking you might have to go all the way back to Shaq.
Yeah, that could be it. That could be it. And you know, I think that you know, given his physical, I think it's kind of a similar question, right? Where it's just the physical presence of these two guys, where you're just like, I've never seen anything like this. I didn't even know it was possible. What are you doing? Because Shaq was so, you know, Shaq was similar, where he was a lot more elusive, a lot faster, a lot more agile in college. And I think it's kind of a similar thing with Zion, where you're like, I don't even know how to comprehend this as a basketball mind. So I think that Shaq is probably actually very much the correct answer, and probably something that I wish I'd thought of myself, and I'm kind of kicking myself I didn't. So I'm glad you guys did.
Well, no. In fairness to me, one of my old bosses and my mentor, he's the one that pointed it out to me, and I was like, okay, well, that's a pretty good point. All right, and then lastly, as we get back into the NBA, last night we saw James Harden in person, and good God, I mean, just it was effortless.
He's playing pretty well, right?
It's almost like the guy's kind of a pretty good score. In terms of coming into this, I feel like we've got done like several 180s on the Rockets this year. Obviously, they had the slow start, and then we're thinking, okay, well, they're not really the threat that the Warriors. They're not the threat to the Warriors that we were hopeful for. Then obviously they've had an unbelievable second half of the season. When you look at them in terms of a matchup for the Warriors, can they actually make them uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they did last year, and that was without Harden playing this kind of basketball. So I would say they can make them uncomfortable. I think they probably recently surpassed the Thunder as the biggest threat to the Warriors. Obviously, the Thunder have you know, a really high upside, especially if Paul George is healthy, but it seems like Paul George is really struggling with that shoulder injury, which limits him on both offense and defense, which I think is kind of the reason why so many people thought that the Thunder were the biggest threat to the Warriors. But, you know, I think that if Chris Paul is playing well and James Harden is playing well and Clint Capella can roll to the basket and be a rim protector in a way that, you know, Golden State doesn't really have an answer to on either side of the ball either, there's a lot to say about Houston, a lot to like about Houston in terms of their overall ceiling for this year, because I think that, you know, Houston can outscore anybody, including Golden State, and I think that, you know, they're passionate, they're well-coached, and I think that Harden has kind of got a lot to prove after, you know, a couple of disappointing postseasons. So I think that, you know, there's a lot on the line for Houston as well, but, you know, Houston is going to continue to be a team to watch as they continue to, you know, keep making big pushes in the postseason, and they gave the Warriors a run for their money last year. I think they're going to do it again this year.
And then lastly, on the other in the other conference, over in the Eastern Conference, now that we've had some time to see how all of these trade deadline moves, how they're affecting certain teams, do you still, for you, is it still Milwaukee over Toronto? Is that the direction you're leaning?
No, it's actually not. I'm on the Toronto team right now just because of the injuries that have bestowed Milwaukee recently. You know, Brogdon going out, Mirotic going out. I think that obviously they have a lot of really good role players who can step into those roles. DJ Wilson's going to get more run. The other guys that they picked up at the trade deadline. I think that it's going to kind of be in the buyout market. But I think, you know, overall, I find that Toronto is just the team that I like the most because Kawhi is, you know, really focused and really engaged and rested because he took a lot of time off during the regular season. There are a few better, if any, better two-way players in the NBA. Pascal Siakam is able to create his own offense now, which is something new. Kyle Lowry has been there before in a way that Milwaukee maybe hasn't. David Nurse, you know, is it Nick Nurse or David Nurse? I just kind of got flipped up for a second. There's two of them in the NBA. They're brothers. One of them's a trainer, I think. But Nick Nurse is...
Nick is a
very, you know, very good X's and O's coach who I think doesn't back down. And I think he's going to have, doesn't have the monkey on his back in the same way that Dwayne Casey did. I think that Dwayne Casey maybe felt overly pressured in a way that I don't think that, Nurse will. Because it's going to be his first time. I think that, even having been on the bench is going to help him, but not having the expectations of previous year's failure will also help him. So I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword in that one where he gets the benefit from both sides of having been there before with this team, but also having, not exactly the reputation of being a choker in the postseason. No, LeBron is going to be really good in the Eastern Conference for them. And I think across the board, Toronto is just the team that I like the most, and it's mostly because I really, really believe in Pascal Siakam.
Brian, you're the best. We always appreciate your time, my man.
My pleasure.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.